When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You have to know who you are. Otherwise, people will put you in these positions to be like, can you do this? And then you find yourself, I don't want to say shucking and jiving, but you teeter that line a little bit. You teeter the line. You got to know exactly what you're not with before you go into those situations. One of the most important things that I've learned throughout all of my different career pursuits has been time management. Managing your time, making a schedule for yourself, and respecting the fuck out of it. Like, without my sister, I would not be who I was. I told my mom, I was like, I'm not going to college. I'm going to move to Hollywood and be an actress. And she was like, bitch, you 16. You ain't going nowhere. You about to take the train to college and bring your black ass back.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Sharla. And today we're talking about being a boss, which I'm really excited to talk about.
Me too. And I'm so excited to talk about being a boss on today of all days, because y'all, this is the season finale. This is the last episode of our first season.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. I'm beklempt, guys. Jesus.
Beklempt. This is an idea that just started in our heads, and it's over a dinner table, a twinkle in our eyes, and now it is in. It's in the world, and we are just so thankful. I feel so blessed and thankful that we have this platform to share with, like, our listeners and other Black women. And I want to say thank you so much for listening and being a part of this journey with us. Like, it really means a lot, and we, like, listen to all of your comments, and we're taking it with us. And I'm going to get emotional.
I'm thankful too. I'm so proud of what we've built in season one, and I'm so proud of the community. I'm thankful for the community, and I can't wait to keep going on this journey.
We will keep going on this journey because we're coming back with a season two. Thanks to everyone who's, like, listened and commented. You've made it possible for us to come back and have a season two of The Secret Lives of Black Women. So there'll be some stuff in between a short break, but we've got a super fire season coming for you in just a moment. But before we get there, we are talking today, as Sharla said, about being a boss. And this is something that, you know, I think about a lot. I'm a freelancer. I don't have one steady job. I have several to pay the bills. But I don't look at necessarily, like, my work of me being a boss or in control. I just look at it as, like, an assortment of various different jobs. So I'm trying to get to the place of being like, I am my own boss. I'm my own boss in work, and I'm a boss in life. And I feel like you are further along in that process.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I am. But I do feel like even though we're talking about being a boss today and entrepreneurship, I don't think that everyone necessarily needs to be a boss. I feel like we have, like, an Instagram culture and just a culture overall that makes everybody feel like they need to be selling handbags. They need to be, like, out here in these streets. Having a 9-to-5 is perfectly fine. Having that 401k, that health insurance, that's amazing. And if that's how you bop like that, like, you don't need to feel pressure. I feel like, even though we're talking about being a boss and being an entrepreneurs today, I think the lessons of entrepreneurship, the kind of personal growth that you have to go through to be your own boss, I think it's helpful for everyone. But I just want to make sure everybody knows that you don't have to be one. But I do think all of these lessons are beneficial to
getting
everyone, no matter what.
Getting a steady paycheck
Absolutely.
Is a dream.
It's a dream. And if that's
comfort,
how you roll,
yes.
Yes. You don't need to feel like you need to not roll that way. But we're talking to Carrie Cottet about it today, who is a good friend of mine. We met in the New York comedy scene, and I just love her African spirit, just her African New York drive. Is she African or Caribbean? We'll find out. She black, but she's also written for White Synax Problem Areas. And she's just an amazing performer, entertainer in New York City with an incredible entrepreneurial drive. And I'm so excited to talk to her.
Me too. She's a comedian, an actor, and a writer. And I met Carrie through you, and she's quite possibly one of the funniest people I've ever interacted with in my entire life. So I like
to call her a beautiful soul.
She's
got a
beautiful
spirit.
She's got a great spirit. I just feel like when we met, she not only had me like cracking up, but was also just dropping these like gems of knowledge and truth that I was like, let me pull out my journal and write this down.
Truly, Lauren, for real though, like every black woman we've met on this podcast and in life is literally the wisest person you've ever known in your life. I don't know what it is about black women. I think it's like the general struggle.
But
it's like you can't walk through this life without being a little bit wise.
Without being wise, but I feel like every woman that we've had on the show also has the ability to like share that knowledge in a way that feels personal and connected. And they are. I feel like each person I meet, I learn something from, and I am like
absolutely
very open and being like, I'm in the process of like learning and growing. And I feel super thankful that we've had some really great teachers and guides on this show. So I'm owning it.
Blessed.
Blessed. Hashtag and blessed. So let's get into it with Carrie.
Let's do it.
You are a comedian, you're a writer, you're an actress, you do everything. And how did you get your start in that world that you could even get to the point that you're like, I'm gonna turn this into like my full-time job, a business?
I have always been doing this my whole entire life. I've been performing. I was writing through elementary school, junior high school. I was always writing short stories, and then short stories turned into poetry, and that turned into performing spoken word, which was shaclack clack. And then spoken word turned into rap. I was like, okay, this is just a better rhythm. This is just a better tempo for me. And rap turned into sketch comedy, believe it or not, because I started writing parodies, and parodies were like battle rap to me. So I started writing parodies, and then I filmed these sketch videos, and then I was like, oh, maybe I should go to school for this. So I went to UCB. I took sketch classes. Sketch classes led to improv. Then I joined like an improv team, and then performing comedy with a group of people made me realize I want to be doing it by myself. So then I started doing stand-up comedy. So that's kind of like the trajectory in my career, but I've never not been doing this and never had plans to do anything else.
Damn. I did not have that clear of a path. I straight up thought I was going to be a nurse for a long time because that's what my parents, that's what Haitians basically. Caribbeans are just like, you're probably going to be a nurse or
I
a doctor.
I could never imagine you as a nurse.
It would be the worst. Like, I could have never imagined myself either. I mean, I didn't think I was going to be a nurse. My parents thought I was going to be a nurse. And I was just like, ugh, I hate hospitals.
Yeah.
I'm not really into sickness. And I just don't. It's just not my steez. And then I went to school for like international affairs and global studies.
Super serious.
I thought I was
going to
be a lawyer.
I could see you as a politician,
yeah,
but like
I was
not
be a
nurse.
Politician. Yeah, I thought
I could
that's
see
what
that.
I thought I was going to be a diplomat. I thought I was
going
to go.
You like power.
I love power, dude. It took such a long time to get to comedy I also got my real estate license after college because I wanted, because I was just like, I'm sick of working for people. I want to be my own boss. And then I just didn't think about the fact that like you only work on commission, and I was broke and I was just like, all right, I can't. And so I was like a real estate agent for a month and then I quit. Girl, I went all
you
over
went
the
all
place.
Over.
I really went all
Did
over the place.
Did you work other things, too, while you were, like, doing your writing and your rapping?
Oh, yeah. So my whole thing was, it's so funny, like straight out of college, and I got out of college so early. Like I graduated when I was 19.
Damn.
I got out a semester early. I was like, fuck this.
And when did you go to college?
Baruch. It's a CUNY school. Yeah. I've only ever lived in Brooklyn. So, yeah. And I was so bad in high school. I told my mom, I was like, I'm not going to college. I'm going to move to Hollywood and be an actress. And she was like, bitch, you 16. You ain't going nowhere. You about to take the train to college and bring your black ass back.
It's a black mama.
Black mama. And that's the thing. Me and my sister joke about this all the time because we also have Caribbean parents, but we're like, we have the only Caribbean parents that didn't set any expectations for us. They didn't tell us what to be. They didn't tell us what not to do. They're not pressuring us to have kids or get married. They're just like,
God. That's amazing.
Where'd they come from?
I don't know. I'm blessed because we don't care what they think.
Where are you guys from?
Oh, I love you.
No, I meant it both ways.
My mom is from Trinidad and my dad is from Guyana.
Ooh, nice mix.
So I'm mixed up. Mm-hmm. But I did a million things too. When I graduated college, I had a clothing line. I had a clothing company. And my sister, that was the first time we started working together. So I've always been creative and business minded, but my sister is like marketing business genius. She's creative too in the way that she thinks about getting this money. So that was our first time ever working together, and that's, we feel like working together on the clothing line is what helped us figure out how to work together now, because that was tough. Like, we physically came to blows over business fighting, like, with the clothing line.
What happened to the clothing line?
The recession hit and people weren't spending $500 on hoodies anymore. Mm-hmm. And so you asked, what did I do for a living?
Yeah. How did you even get that started? I mean, that's so entrepreneurial be like, okay, I'm going to start my own clothing line. Like, how do you get money to do that?
You saw an opportunity because people were buying $500 sweatshirts.
No. Well, in high school, everything I've done has always been driven by a need to tell the truth. So that's why I did poetry and all these things. And in high school, I started a t-shirt company because I was like, I got things to say and people need to know about it. So I made t-shirts that said, Jesus is black, get over it. I was selling fuck the police t-shirts. I was 15 years old. I figured out how to get a vendor's license. I set up shop in Soho.
15 years old? 15. You figured out how to get a vendor's license?
I was making my own t-shirts, ironing them on. So I always had the entrepreneurial mindset, and I kind of knew my way around clothing. So my senior year in college, I designed like my own hoodie for like a Halloween costume. And a friend of mine was like, oh, can you do mine too? And I did it. And then everyone in the school was like, yo, can you make me one? Can you make me one? And then my sister was like, oh, hold up. Hold up. You broke ass CUNY friends is buying the $75 hoodie. Oh, I think we have an idea. So she was like, let's go out on Black Friday. Let's do a pilot run. So we went to H&M.
Wait, what was your sister doing at the time? Because you were 15 and how old was she? 18?
Well, no.
Like, you guys are only a few years apart.
15 was a t-shirt company. I fast forwarded to being 19, like senior year of college when I did the hoodies. She was in advertising. She worked in advertising. She had a full career. And
what's
she was
the age difference?
5 years.
Okay.
So she was like, you got something here. Let's figure it out. So we had a credit card. You're like, where'd you get money from?
Yeah, okay.
I had a credit card. We went to H&M. We bought some blank hoodies. We went and brought Swarovski crystals because that was in. It was like in the Ed Hardy era when everybody was like, let's throw shiny shit on it and sell it. We set up a table in front of Soho. It was Black Friday. We got a credit card machine because my sister was like, look, these hoodies are about to sell for $250 on the street. No one has cash. Get a credit card terminal. We got like the first ever credit card terminal machine. And we sat in front and people bought our hoodies off the street. And she was like, this is dope, but it's too cold. I'm not sitting outside with you anymore. We need to be in boutiques. So literally within 3 months, we were in boutiques. And 2 months after that, Jay-Z was wearing our shit.
Holy shit.
Is there a picture of Jay-Z wearing our shit?
Yeah, there is. He wore it on VH1 Storytellers.
Get out of here. What does it say? Please give me your business advice.
Give me business advice, Karen.
What did it say?
So I sent him a concept of a skull with a top hat, and we put it on the back of it. And literally, it's an image. It's a whole skull smoking a cigarette, and it's like black and glass crystals. It's dope.
Wait, so you guys designed this
by hand design?
Who designed
crystal
it?
Crystal by crystal.
Okay, crystal.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Crystal by Swarovski. Crystal by crystal.
Did you have like employees? Was it just you and your sister? You doing the production? Your sister doing the management?
No, we do everything together. So she was out here putting stuff on crystals too. And then at one point when we got into stores, and this is why we ultimately went under, was because what you don't realize is with clothing companies, you have to front. They'll put in orders, but you have to produce it. And yes. then you get your money when mm-hmm. you deliver. We didn't have all the startups, so we weren't able to, like, meet the demands. Mm-hmm. We had a sweatshop. We went and found the little African lady in the bathroom, I was like, I'm trying to support Black-owned businesses, sis. Can I give you $8 an hour? Can you come to my house? Do you have friends? So Fatu and Olu, shout out to y'all if y'all listening. They came with the crystals and tried to help us meet our deliverables.
So done. Labor practices.
Oh my God. If you had to do it again, charge them more, pay them more than $8.
Yeah, yeah. You'll do it.
First of all, this was in 2007. $8 was cool back then. I feel like, you know.
That was straight up minimum wage. It literally was until like last year. $8,
it's still being passed.
Right.
Yeah. 15. This is amazing, first of all. Yeah. So the clothing company goes under and you're like, okay, I'm going to focus on my stand-up now. This is going to be my new business. This is my business of me.
Stand-up didn't come until after. So this is crazy. I did the clothing company. That went under. And I was like, I still love fashion. So I was a stylist for a while. And then I was like, okay, I need to eat. So then I became like a store manager. No experience. That's a whole other story about how I lied.
I want that story.
So the quick tea on that was I didn't have any experience, but I wanted to be a store manager. So I created a resume that said I had managed stores before. What I did was I went on like monster.com and I looked up listings for store managers. And you know, when they list the duties and responsibilities, I was like, I'm gonna copy and paste that. Put that shit in the past tense, created a clean resume, had my best speaking friends be my references.
Yeah, I love that.
Because they only call who you put down. Yeah, they're not doing all this work.
Of course.
So I ended up getting the job at United Colors of Benetton. They made me manage the one on fucking Fifth Avenue, bro. Saks Fifth Avenue. I lied about my age. I told them I was like 25. I was definitely like 20.
Never done the job before.
Never done the job. They gave me the Saks Fifth Avenue
Holy
location.
Shit.
Then they gave me a new store in Roosevelt Field. I opened it up. But me, who I am, like, I be quitting but not telling the bosses. So, like, I was the worst manager ever, bro. Like, I hired all my friends just so they could get a check. And so I kept doing things like that so I could just get unemployment. My job was... Let me work for 3 months long enough to get unemployment.
The levels of this scam just keep getting deeper.
And I use the unemployment money to pay for improv classes.
Holy shit. This was a really...
I love everything.
There's so much fraud.
Sophisticated fraud.
So much sophisticated fraud.
I'm going to stop you for one quick second and we're going to take a break and then we'll be back with Carrie.
If you're on a GLP-1, you're probably loving the results. But how do you feel? All of those side effects can take a toll. So now what? Get to GNC. We'll help with solutions to address those side effects and keep you going on your journey. GNC.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Nike, Walmart, and Zappos. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers. And Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
And now we're back.
Carrie, you're so... I genuinely think you're brilliant. I really do.
Seriously.
I really do. I mean, It's one of the reasons why I love watching your comedy, because I feel like people pretend that this business is not a business. They pretend that it's just about art. And of course it's about art. Of course it's about you being as genuine as you can, showing people who you are, you know. All that's really important, but if you don't have the business acumen, you will get lost. You will get eaten up.
You sure will. I tell people that all the time. Like, it's called show business for a reason. Yeah. And you can't neglect either part of that sentence. Like, you got to be aggressive on all parts of that.
Yep.
This is a crazy industry that we have decided to be in.
I think about it constantly. Why did I do this?
How would you define the crazy, though, for people who aren't in it?
Okay.
What do you mean by when you say this is crazy?
So to me, it's crazy because I come from a 9-to-5 world. I come from a world where I have to actually answer to people. And my context is I've only worked with one, like, lady showrunner team, and all the other ones have been men. So I only have one to compare it to. And that one just happened to be great.
I'm happy that you had such a wonderful experience. I got this thing with my voice where I'll be being very sincere, but people can't tell.
It's
I was
sarcastic.
Being sincere. No, yeah, I was, yeah. I'm truly happy. No, because writers' rooms are tough.
They're crazy.
And crazy.
They're tough. They're tough places, and they're a very specific skill. It's like not like being a comic at all. Like, a writer's room is like a writer. It's its own universe.
Yeah, I made an aside, and I need to provide further context.
Please.
I'm not into the idea that more women in power is inherently better than men. I think it's all about the personalities you get. I've worked with female showrunners that are trash and male showrunners that are trash. So while I'm happy that there are more women, and we can't do no worse than the men's been doing, to be honest. Like,
we
no
can't.
Woman's gonna
and
pull her dick out in the back room.
Yeah, we have to have the room to be bad.
Bad, too. And that's what equality is, too. Like, women should be in power and get to also be crazy and terrible, just
it's
like
all
men.
To be trash.
Sociopaths.
Yeah. Women should have the right to be sociopaths too.
And what is, just for, I'm just providing context for people who, what's a writer's room?
So anytime you see a TV show and it's a narrative, even a lot
even
of times
not.
When you see a reality show, there's a writer's room associated with it. There's a room of between 3 and 20 people, like, writing the storylines, writing the character outlines, writing all kinds of things. Everything you see on a TV show, a writer's room made it. I mean, and they can be between, like, what, 2 weeks and a year?
Yeah.
Like, and they're you don't know. After you leave a writer's room, you have to wait and see if the show gets picked up.
Yeah. You have to learn that there's different ways that people can tell you no. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times it's not going to come as that no, period, full stop. It's just going to be, you just didn't hear back.
Yeah.
Or they recast your part. You already had a role, but then you get a deadline article that said there's a new bitch playing it. Like, it's a lot
that's
of passive
thing.
Aggressive
You're so
stuff.
You're so expendable, yo. Woo! That's why you have to be such a beast, because no one gives a fuck about you.
No one gives
you
a fuck.
You do not matter. Nothing has taught me more about how I don't fucking matter and I have to make myself matter than show business.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're replaceable all the time, everywhere, every time.
Yep.
and a showrunner's replaceable.
Everybody.
A writer's replaceable. An actor's replaceable. A director's replaceable. Nobody
you
gives a fuck
about you.
You
know you're replaceable when they bring in a whole other light-skinned bitch to play Aunt Viv, and don't say nothing. They just brought in a new shorty, put the little thing, the role of Aunt Viv is now gonna be played by this bitch, and business as usual. Nothing.
You think they gave a fuck about Aunt Viv?
They didn't give a fuck about dark-skinned Aunt Viv.
They didn't give a
oh my
fuck.
God.
She's still mad about it.
She's still mad. About it.
She ain't never work again. That's
she
how
she ain't never worked
so
again.
So crazy.
It's a crazy business. You
it's
have
so
to,
wild, B.
You have to be your own biggest advocate.
Yeah, and that's why I think producing content is so important, and owning your things is
100%.
So important, because you cannot wait for the one opportunity. You can't wait for the one person that's going to see something in you. You have to constantly keep creating. It's not going to be one thing that puts you on. It's not going to be one late night credit. It's not going to be writing in one TV show. It's not going to be one podcast.
It's going to be 10 years.
It's going to be 10 years. And then people are going to say, oh, she made it overnight.
She made it overnight. She's an overnight success.
Where did Charlotte come from? Meanwhile, she was doing clench and release.
Oh my God.
From,
hustling.
You know what I mean? Hustling. And they're going to say it's overnight. So I think show business is crazy because it teaches you how to deal with rejection on a whole other level.
Constantly.
And it teaches you to I don't take shit for granted. I have filmed TV shows. I have gotten the date. And I don't tell nobody it's coming
out
until maybe it's on.
Until it airs.
I'll be like, oh shit, did y'all catch the DVR?
Yeah.
Because you never know. They will cut you out. You will not be in it.
They will remove the show before it airs.
They pull
and
the
just
show.
Decide it's not going to go.
They don't email you sometimes and tell you when your episode is going to be on. They don't email you and tell you that the 6 episodes you were in is not coming out. They don't let you know.
It's wild.
So all of this truly sounds crazy. And I feel like I'm entering this world just now. So what advice would you give someone that's entering this world or is thinking about it?
Don't. It's crowded. There's too many crowded. Of us already. There can only be one of us at a time. Nah. Sincerely, I would say be unapologetic. I think there are so many misconceptions that people are going to have about you just being a black woman, depending on what type of black woman. There's going to be ideas before you even come in the room. And what you need to remember early on is that I don't got shit to do with you. People are going to think whatever they want to think. And there's nothing you can do when people have decided to make up their mind about who you are. And you just have to do your best. That's it. Every day, do the best job that you can do. Be diligent, do your work, grind, and try not to let any of the bullshit affect you. And that sounds easier said than done, but the quicker you develop a thick skin, especially as a black woman in this industry, because they will try you, they will try your blackness, they will say things about you, they will send the one black person in the room to come and tell you to dial it back a little bit, they will tell you to be more black, they will have you do all kinds of crazy things, and you really have to have a strong sense of self and who you are and decide beforehand what you will and won't do so that you don't have to sacrifice your integrity, because they will test you.
Your sister manages you. Is that okay to say on the pod? Is that cool?
Yeah. We used to keep it a secret for a while, but it's
Why?
Okay now. Because we didn't want anyone to discredit either
to not
of
be taken
us.
Seriously.
Yeah. When we started, I was always an actor as a child, and she was the one. Like, without my sister, I would not be who I was. Like, she was the one that was like, Mommy, carry me as an agent. And she found, and she took, because my mother would only do something if we came to her and was like, this is what we want to do. And my sister was like, she can dance. She needs an agent. So she has always literally been my right-hand person. Whenever I had an idea or needed to do something, she was like, this is how you sew it up. This is how you really make that thing a thing. We came up with a thing. We were like, listen to what I'm saying and not my tone. And that was something that I took with me forever. Like, you can't ever, you don't know how somebody's feeling. You might be coloring it through your own lens, but is what I'm saying valid? And so that helped us from being like, why are you talking to me like that? You acting like this is your company. You acting like this is your idea. And we were able to cut through a lot of that bullshit. So like through the company, through all of that stuff, we have just always worked on everything. So now where it's like, I don't know that I would work on anything without her. She's just so fucking good. She's so good. Any project, that's my EP. We doing it together. We in it mm-hmm. together. She quit her job. She had an advertising job. She was an ad exec. She was making money and she quit to like manage me and so that we can do this together. So we in it.
I love watching you and your sister, honestly. I think it's so beautiful and inspirational. And I think you guys are both geniuses. I think you're geniuses. And I also, so I moved my little sister out to LA. And one of the reasons was because it's so isolating. It's very lonely, and not just in a friendship way, but in a business way. And I'm trying to encourage her like the way only a sister could. Only a sister could be like, I see something in you. I think you're dope. You're the best. You're the dopest bitch on the planet. I want to see you rise. But honestly, it's like selfish. Like I want her to like, I want to like partner with her at some point. I think like black family doing things together, especially in a super white industry, which is the entertainment industry, like all of the people with the power, all the people with the money are white, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like ain't nothing wrong with like seeing something in your sibling and being like,
nepotism is the way of the world. And your sister is talented. Like,
she's talented.
Even if I had a talentless sister, if I could pull her up, I had a bunch of baby brothers that my father had with other women, I'm gonna put each one of these little niggas on however I can. Like, what you do? You make beats? Come here and get this production credit on my movie. Score this shit. We have to. We have to look
we
out for one
to.
Another.
You have to. And it's like my sister doesn't work in the internet. She works in the beauty industry. She's an esthetician and she does lashes. But she believes in me more than anyone else in the world. And I feel like that's just a huge thing to have someone in your corner that just like no matter
Hypes
what you,
you
do,
up.
Gonna be like, I'm so proud of this. I'm so proud of you. Like you are the best. You're an inspiration. And that feels really good. And I want to talk to you about your, so you do all of these things. Essentially, your business is you.
Yep.
And how, first of all, just making that transition mentally, being like, okay, the product isn't jeans, the product isn't a sweatshirt or a t-shirt. I'm now the product. I'm selling me and all I have to offer. When you're the product and sometimes things don't go well or things don't go as planned, like, how do you guys navigate that in separating your personal from professional?
I think that we have a very strong sense of identity, of purpose, and we have these things that we agreed on beforehand. We were like, okay, these are our deal breakers. This is the shit that we decided we won't do before we even made it. This way, when we're faced with those tough decisions, when we're faced with those million-dollar checks, we won't then have to decide in real time. So yeah. Those are some of the things that we decided on beforehand. And the other thing is, you have to know who you are. Otherwise, people will put you in these positions to be like, can you do this? And then you find yourself, I don't want to say shucking and jiving, but you teeter that line a little bit. You teeter the line. You got to know exactly what you're not with before you go ahead, before you go into those situations. Did I answer it?
Yes. I hope so. And that applies to like all business. What advice would you give for, because I feel like this episode is truly about like the entrepreneurial spirit and you are truly a boss. Like, what advice would you give for women who are at home listening, who are like, I want to start my own business? Like the 15-year-old girl that's like, I'm making these dope slogan shirts, but I want to put them out there.
I say research. People underestimate the importance of doing research. There's so many people that start companies, people that start shows. They don't ask nobody how it's done. They don't ask for best practices.
They didn't go to shows.
They didn't go
out
to no shows. Yeah. They don't have a strategy. They don't have a targeted audience in mind. How are you even going to reach these people? I think you have to do research. You have to read a lot. I went to the physical library. Like when I was designing with the fashion company, because I didn't have any technical knowledge, I snuck my ass into FIT and I was out there Xeroxing stuff and making photocopies. Like, you have to do the work, and I think information is your best tool. So learn as much as you can about the field that you're going into, about the business. People underestimate reading books. Read a book. They make books. They have books for every trade. Read a book about it.
What's a good book that you've read?
For comedy business.
Whichever.
Well, it depends. Like, for acting now, I'm reading How to Stop Acting. That's a pretty straightforward book about acting. When I was in the design industry, there was like how to build your own t-shirt company. There's just always like these how-to things that you read and you just learn about it.
I didn't do any of that. I incorporated. So like a lot of TV writers, when you get to a certain level, you incorporate. Mm-hmm. And I just use hearsay. I was just like, I heard somebody say that I should incorporate. Mm-hmm. And I just went full speed ahead without doing any kind of real research. I literally used like information I had heard somewhere secondhand. And I feel like I read in like, maybe it was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I read in like one book that you should incorporate in Delaware because there's like less taxes or some shit or whatever. So I remember when I told my lawyers that I wanted to incorporate, they're like, where are you incorporated? I was like, Delaware. Even though I live and work in, I mean, I was working in New York or LA or whatever, vice versa at the time, because that's where my industry is. And there, and then I had to pay to reincorporate in LA, which was an added cost, which was stupid, which I could have just avoided if I had just read a book or asked more people and actually done any real research. I also went a period of time after I had incorporated without working, without getting staffed on a TV show, and I was becoming broke, right? I was like going through my savings, and I went to apply for unemployment and it didn't go through, and I was just like talking to one of my actor friends who had incorporated, and I was telling him this. He was like, oh no, you can't apply for unemployment after you incorporate because the government says that you are an entrepreneur, you can take care of yourself. What he did brilliantly, because he had read a book, he read a book called, I think it's called Ink Yourself. He read a book which teaches you how to incorporate yourself and the benefits and the negatives and all that other stuff. What he did, because he reads books and because he's prudent and smart, is after he incorporated, he kept his W-2 job so that he could apply for unemployment on his W-2 job in case he doesn't get any more acting jobs, which was a brilliant thing to do, which I would have known had I read
a book. What's his W-2 job, though?
It was literally just like a part-time, like a survival job. Like, so he was working at a call
call center. Yeah.
I can't do survival jobs.
We can't all do them, but at least he had a plan.
Yeah, that's very smart. He knew. That's smart.
I'm just sitting out here. I'm just like, why can't I apply for employment? I'm poor. And then, but then after that, I was like, okay, lesson learned. I will read books and I will make more prudent decisions next time, because you can't just be out here just doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my story about being dumb.
Well, that's great. Something that I learned from my sister, though. Like, she asks so many questions. Mm-hmm. She will ask you down. And you know what's so funny? I feel like when you're a kid and you're in school and the teacher's like, do you have any questions? You feel like if you raise your hand to ask a question, you're dumb.
Yeah.
But I've learned many times since that the people who ask the questions are the smart ones.
They are.
Because a lot of times people don't understand, but they're afraid to appear dumb, so they just actually sit there and be dumb. Now I'm just like, I don't know what that is, sir. What is that? Can you explain that?
That's one of the things that I think comedy and entrepreneurship in general has taught me. It's like, if you don't have any real curiosity, like, so much of what you learn is genuinely being curious about what you're doing and the business of it and who's in it? What's going on? I want to know everything that's going on in my business, in my industry. I want to know what's going on. How does this podcast business work? How do we get to the next level? I'm constantly like interested. I think being interested and like not being afraid to look dumb, which I think improv has helped me with a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I love improv for that.
Well, I mean, I don't do improv, but it's been a struggle for me to learn to be like, it's okay to ask a question and like not know everything, because I feel like so often and like college you just want to be smart. And if you're like the only black person in the room, you're like, I want to be smart.
Yep.
And then there's that thing if you're like, but I'm actually hurting myself by not asking these 100%. questions, and I'm just like sitting here fucking lost and trying to draw, like you're Delaware, they draw from context clues. And then you're like, I'm piecing this together all fucking wrong. Like, those clues, I'm piecing this together all wrong. And
but seriously,
it's just better to ask a question and just be like, I'm learning, I'm not afraid.
This is one of the things I learned in improv, like, and I think it was particularly important as a black girl. I remember one of my first improv classes. And I recommend improv to literally anyone. I think it's good for your life. We had to like do object work, which means that you're literally like learning how to create objects on stage, because you are pretending. You have nothing on stage with you when you're in an improv scene. So if you're
it's moving a box, literally miming.
So if you're moving a box, you have to like physically act like you're really moving a box. And one time, so our teacher asked us to go up in front of the class and do the object work, do the miming. And I was just like, I stood there and I didn't know what to do. And I was like, I'm on fire. And then everyone just stared at me in silence. And my teacher was like, are you on fire? Because if that's what being on fire looks like, then I don't know if that's real. And it was just this moment of like, oh, I have to be willing to look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I have to like let go of this wall that I have up. Because I was the only black person in the class and I didn't want to look stupid. But improv really helped me be comfortable with looking stupid. It helped me with my vulnerability. It helped me to just be seen and be.
Yeah. I really felt like, you know, I have to let people know that I'm smart, because I guess early on in my life, I've had those reinforcements, those people to be like, you are smart. Like, I've always walked with, look, bitch, I skipped 2 grades. I graduated high school at 16. Like, I know I'm smart. And that kind of helped me not care about what anybody had to think about anything. Like, it made me prioritize my own truth over what anybody else perceived or thought. Now I'm just like, I don't even give a fuck what y'all think. Y'all could think I'm whoever the hell. I don't got time.
What advice would you give people just about, like, the nitty-gritty of running a business and, like, being at a crossroads of deciding which way to go with the business? Should the business grow? Should the business stop?
I think one of the most important things that I've learned throughout all of my different career pursuits has been time management. Managing your time, making a schedule for yourself, and respecting the fuck out of it. Like, I set an alarm. I wake up to this, girl, last 2 weeks, I've been waking up at 5:30 a.m. because my to-do list is that aggressive. When you really start to do it, it's just like, oh my God, there's not enough hours in the day. And I've been waking up, and you have to put the hours in, and your friends will be like, can you come out? Can you do happy hour? You know, you work for yourself. That's a common misconception. People think because you work for yourself, you can just take off. And it's like, no, respect my time. And I went at it like, if I could go in and work 40 hours a week for somebody else, be on time, be committed, be focused while I'm there, then why would I shortchange myself? So that's something, it was hard to do, and it's a lot easier said than done. But if you can do it and you make it click.
I had the exact same experience like when I became an actual entrepreneur, which is being in show business and having a corp and having to hunt for your food, basically. I also wake up around that 5-ish time. Yeah. I can't do earlier than 5:30. I feel like that's my breaking point.
Same.
And I also have an aggressive to-do list. Mm-hmm. And it also is about being organized. It's about, I like to think it at least 5 months out.
Girl, high like, five.
Girl, it's like, because I know that if I'm not thinking 5 months into the future, that in 5 months, I ain't gonna have nothing to eat. Uh-huh. I'm not gonna have anything to eat. So it's just like, I actually love the beast that's come out of me that entrepreneurship has made me become.
Yep.
It makes you become someone who cannot, you do have to say no. And it does have to be a complete sentence. And
yep.
and it doesn't wait for anybody. I've had to do things that I'm not personally, I'm like such a shy person and I don't like to hurt anybody's feelings and I really want everybody to like me. And it just don't work. It just
nope.
doesn't work. Because I always have to compromise myself or I have to eat shit when mm-hmm. I don't speak up and say, it's just made me have to speak up a lot more.
Me too. I also think that it has helped me in my regular life. Like what you said about being 6 months ahead of stuff
yep.
is true, especially in comedy. Like we have dates all the way. I know where I'm going to yep. be January 2020. Yep. I know where I'm performing. So you kind of have to work backwards, but it's also helped me in my everyday relationships and my personal conversations. Like now I'm starting to get ahead of a problem. I'm
yep.
like, oh, wait a minute. I can see that this is, it's A to B to C. It's also like improv. So like I can be in a conversation with someone and be like, I see where this is going. You about to take it to C. And I'm able to like course direct because I'm looking ahead all the time. So
it's also helped me like be less petty and be less, I don't get into the minutia of bullshit as
mm-hmm.
much because I literally don't have time.
Yep.
Yep.
Don't have time. That's my motto. I don't got time.
I feel like this is a good place to ask, Carrie, what's your secret?
I would say my secret is saying no.
Ooh, I love that.
And people always look at no like it's a negative, but sometimes saying, and I know Shonda Rhimes had this whole year of the yes, and everyone was like, you need to say yes more. And I'm like, but you don't understand that saying no to y'all is me saying yes to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been eye-opening for me. Like, I don't think that it's being selfish. I think that you have to take care of yourself. You have to prioritize your needs sometimes because it's just like when you're, it's a survival tactic. It's like when you're on an airplane, you got to put the mask on yourself before you can save others. So if I can't survive, then I can't help you right now. And it just means that sometimes I say no to shit. I say no to things all the time. Like, and this business is hard and I've missed a lot of friends' things and they got to understand because this job, this career waits for nobody. And sometimes I just got to get that work and you know I meant to be there.
Someone also told me recently, which no is a complete sentence. So saying
that.
No and then not explaining why you're saying no, but being like, no, that's it.
It's so freeing.
It is.
Like just when you said no, I felt the weight just leave the room.
Yeah.
Like, nope.
Yeah.
No.
I love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carrie.
You
Thank
are just
you.
True sunshine. Like you are a star.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. I'm so proud of you guys doing the podcast. I think the more Black women with podcasts, the better. That's why I'm starting one, too. So we got to support each other.
We can do a drop.
Do you have
for you.
Anything you want to plug before
yeah.
you go?
Sure. I am the host of a podcast called On the Chopping Block at On TCB Podcast. And it's out now wherever you be listening to podcasts at.
Thanks for coming, Carrie Cottett. It was a pleasure to
Thank
have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Carrie literally had my stomach.
She's so funny.
Like literally my stomach hurts from talking to Carrie.
I feel like I'm going to think about that United Colors of Benetton
forever.
Story forever and just like crack.
Niggas just be funny.
Well, also just the thing of like, who hasn't been a fake reference for a friend on a resume?
My Haitian aunt has been a reference for so many jobs that they don't know about. But I love Black people's just hustle spirit. How else are we going to be out here? You know,
just the nature of Blackness to be like, I'm going to make opportunity for myself out of nothing, and I'm going to show up and still excel. This conversation was also really important for me because I am in the burgeoning stages of like trying to take ownership of my career like a boss, like you guys.
Lauren,
that's very silent.
I think you're a little baby boss. And I my husband likes to call me a baby hawk. and one day I'll be a big hawk. And I think you're going to be a big hawk too, Lauren. I think you're so talented. I think you're so smart and sharp. And I feel like you're going to be a beast and
take
over.
Yeah, but just like listening to you and Carrie and, you know, your advice on your work practices, and this is how you do things and approach things in the world. Like, I just sat back and took notes because I do want to someday get to that level, and I recognize the things in myself that I need to work on to get there. But it was just good to, A, see it in action, see your rapport, but also just to have those reminders. So
I feel like work is the operative word because I feel like I'll say I work a lot, but I don't think anyone knows what that means. And it literally is like you literally have to create systems. Like, you do need checklists and tasks like checked off because you have to be organized, and you do have to wake up early because maybe you have a full-time writing job and you're working on other projects, or you have to get on other calls, or you have to do whatever. But I'm always so grateful for the fact that I have the energy and I'm healthy enough to do it. So I'm just like, if I can do it, I want to do it right now.
Yeah. And it's like, you can't just, what I'm learning is you can't just want it. And it's not just talent. It's work.
I actually like to say talent is nothing.
That's a good quote.
I say it all the time to people because I was like, I see mad talented people all the time who ain't doing nothing. Because I feel like talent is maybe 20% of it. The rest of it is everything else. The rest of it is being organized. It's thinking on your feet. It's being relentless. And I don't want to say like relentless, but it's just like being persistent, trying and failing. I also feel like it's perspective too, because I had to come to love failure. Instead of being afraid of failure, I like to say you win or you learn.
Yeah, which is something.
It's just like, you just gotta, failure is, I appreciate failure more than I appreciate success, because failure teaches me something. Failure tells me something. Whereas success is great. I love it. But it's just like, don't be afraid to fail.
Yeah, it's something that I'm still struggling with. And it's really interesting that you were like, talent means nothing.
I truly believe that.
And I believe that, but sometimes, and this is me being like frank and honest, is that I think that that's all I have is talent. I don't know if I have like the drive to get out there and do all of the things. So it's, you know, it's my internal.
I think you're being more honest with yourself than most people are being.
It's my internal thing of being like, well, I want to do this and I need to show up. With that said, let me, and before I go into tailspin of my own head and thoughts of what I need to be doing, how I need to be doing it, what do you think the word of the week is?
Hustle, drive, hustle. Passion, scams.
Scams.
I think it's passion. You know what? I don't actually know.
I was going to say hustle, but I love hustle.
Hustle's good.
Hustle, drive, passion, scams, just flowing together.
Oh, no.
No.
Stephanie, yes. Our producer, is saying that she thinks the word of the week might be no. And I think that's definitely
actually the word of the week.
One. Yeah.
And this is why Stephanie is a boss in her own right. Because, yes, no. No is a complete sentence.
Yep.
No in the sense, for me, of being able to not only tell other people no, but to tell myself no, and telling myself no to the other thing and not being afraid of doing the work.
No for me is like literally saying, I loved what Carrie said about saying no to someone is saying yes to yourself, because I'll frequently sacrifice myself so that I don't have to say no to another person because I feel so bad. And I've had to like really, I haven't done it yet. I'm still working on it, of just being able to say no to people and just listening to myself and doing what I want. Or doing what's best for me, even if it like hurts somebody else's feelings, because that's the hardest thing for me, is like facing making other people disappointed or sad, or like literally firing someone, or just saying, I don't want to work with you because this doesn't work for me. It's still really hard. So yeah, the word of the week is no.
Is no. So maybe this weekend, if you don't want to do something or you need to say no, practice just saying no.
Yeah.
All right.
What a great episode, guys. It's always a pleasure. Bye.
We are your hosts, Charla Lauriston and Lauren Domino. The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher. Our producer is Stephanie Kariuki. Our editor is Gianna Palmer. Special thanks to our chief content officer, Chris Bannon, sound designer, Brendan Burns, and our recording engineers, Jared O'Connell, Jordan Duffy, and Andy Christens. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SLBW. See you later.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.